مساء الخير واهلا وسهلا بكل المشاهدين مشاهدين بودكاست عدالتي. انا كرم شوملي بنضم لكم بشكل مباشر من برلين. هي الحلقه رح تكون الحلقه الاخيره من هذا البودكاست. عملنا موسمين وتحدثنا عن تطورات محاكمه الطبيب السوري علاء أمين، الطبيب المتهم بارتكاب جرائم ضد الانسانيه اثناء عمله المشافي العسكريه بسوريا. المحاكمه عم تتم بمدينه فرانكفورت بالمانيا ولا تزال مستمره لحد الان. خلص البودكاست، ما خلصت المحاكمة، بس المركز السوري للعدالة والمسائل اللي عم بقدم لكم هذا البودكاست رح يستمر بتقديم تحديثات دائمة عن مجريات هاي المحاكمة، سواء على صفحة المركز السوري على الفيسبوك أو على الموقع أو باللغتين العربية والإنجليزية. حسن ومارلينا زملائنا بالمركز السوري واللي موجودين على طول عم يتابعوا هاي المحاكمة، جهود مشكورة لجلب هي التحديثات للمتابعين. بعد هذا البودكاست حيكون في أكيد برامج تواصل تفاعلية مع المهتمين بمجريات العدالة وبتطورات العدالة، خصوصا تحت منظمة الولاية القضائية العالمية. المركز السوري أكيد رح يضاعف الجهود أكثر بالمستقبل كرمال يخليكم على اطلاع بهي التحديثات. كتير انبسطت بهذا الوقت معكم، كتير انبسطت بالتفاعل. كل الحلقات بالموسمين حتكون موجودة على صفحة المركز السوري، على محل ما بتستمعوا لأي بودكاست بشكل صوتي. الفيديوهات حتكون موجودة على صفحة المركز السوري للعدالة والمساءلة، كمان على مجموعة اي ان تي الإخبارية أو على موقع كابتيفيت اف ام. حابب أشكر كتير روجر، محمد العبد الله، نسمة، وويس ومايكل بالذات، يلي هو كان خلينا نقول الجانب التقني واللي كان خلى كل شيء يتم بأفضل وجه. بدون ما أطول عليكم، معنا تحديثات عن المحاكمة هي المرة، بس هنا مقابلة مع كاترين ماركيو ويل يلي هي من الآلية الدولية المحايدة والمستقلة اللي تابعة للأمم المتحدة واللي هي المفروض تتابع وتجمع حقائق بخصوص خلينا نقول جرائم معينة عم بتصير بسوريا. ما حطول عليكم، ما حكي كتير عن هاي المقابلة، المقابلة بالإنجليزي بس حكون ترجمة بالعربي، وبتخيل إلى لقاء آخر. وتحياتي للجميع وضلوا بألف خير، وإن شاء الله بسوريا العدالة فيها بتكون مثل الشمس. تحياتي للجميع. مايكل، thanks.
Well, Katrin, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. Could you please maybe introduce yourself to our viewers?
Yes, sure, Karam. Thanks a lot for this invitation. My name is Katrin Makuel. I'm the head of the International Impartial and Independent Mechanism for Syria. It's a mechanism which is, as we will talk about, investigate and support justice efforts by competent jurisdictions. That's really what it is about. And I'm originally a judge from France, and I've been working for the United Nations, including in judicial capacities, since I believe 1998. So a long time already.
And you go a long way. You participated in the tribunals in Yugoslavia, Cambodia, and
Kosovo,
Rwanda.
Well. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Rwanda, its appeals chamber. Yes.
Yeah. And so far, how do you think the Syrian conflict is different from all of these previous conflicts that you examined closely and you looked into?
Well, it's different in many respects, but I would say, in terms of the type of work we do at the AAAM, probably the main difference is we don't have access to Syria. The previous experience of international justice I participated in, we had access to the country where the crimes occurred. And another big difference is certainly the amount of digital information and evidence that had been collected before we started to intervene, which of course is an important element of, you know, the ecosystem in which we operate.
Yeah.
We have many interlocutors that have been documenting the existence of crimes long before the mechanism came into existence, and engaging with them working with multiple jurisdictions as well is something novel for me, at least, and my colleagues. So I could speak about the intensity of the conflict, the large amount of crimes, but it is true that I've worked in conflict before where there were many core international crimes committed, very serious ones. So I don't want to enter into that kind of comparison difficulty. I think that's not something appropriate for the victims.
Well, going back then to the IIIM, it's, you said it's international, impartial,
independent.
Independent. These keywords usually come to the to those who perceive it as like flying, sophisticated keywords. But how important is that in your work?
No, you're right. The three I's have a lot of meaning for us, and these are not buzzwords. Being independent is important when you're dealing with a conflict as politicized as the Syrian conflict. It's really important that those involved in the accountability effort have no other agenda than giving justice, supporting justice for the victims, and victims from the entire communities in Syria, not or sometimes outside Syria for some of the crimes attributed to Daesh. We are not focusing on specific groups of potential perpetrators. We are looking at the most serious crimes, irrespective of the affiliation. That's about, in part, impartiality, but also independence from states who may be supporting our efforts and may have agenda. Which is normal for state. They have their political stance. We are not influenced by those. And I mean, some of you may have seen, we are listing those states that have been contributing to financially to the mechanism, particularly at a time where we didn't have a regular budget from the United Nations. That doesn't give any a state that is a supporter of the IIIM any say in the substantive work that we are doing. Of course, we seek cooperation from states because we need then to assist the process in the way that are appropriate, but we don't accept interference. Other forms of impartiality, I would say, is really to make sure that we find way to access those communities that are less easily accessible, that may not be that informed about the work we do, or even not consider that the IIIM could be facilitating justice for them, maybe because they associate, based on what they hear, certain interlocutors, that we may not be justice facilitated for them. But in fact, it's important we reach out to them and say, we are not focusing only on certain groups, right?
And there are five integral phases of your work, right? So it starts by collecting evidence. So how hard has that been? Especially as you mentioned, you're trying to do that remotely because there is no access to granted by the Syrian government, right? So
that's
how hard is that?
I mean, the important first step was really to create to build the trust with those entities, various entities, state, international organization, other parts of the UN, but also civil society actors, Syrian and international, that have been documenting crimes. So building the trust, making them understand that there is an interest in sharing the information, the evidence they collected with the mechanism, not only because of our capacity and mandate to preserve it, but also because of our capacity to aggregate the information together and share it with competent jurisdictions. Those who are having investigations ongoing as we speak, but also those which maybe not have a jurisdiction at the moment, but may acquire it in the future. It's really the two trends on which we work, which are important. Building cases for the future are important because we are very much conscious of the fact that the ongoing existing judicial avenues are limited, too limited, given the scale of crimes committed in Syria and the expectation of victims, but nevertheless important to seize. When you don't have enough judicial opportunities, you can't neglect those that exist. You need to be able to support them the best you can. So building the trust, creating the conditions for safely sharing information with us, also for us to be able to respect the conditions attached by our sources to whether we can share or not everything that they shared with us, whether we can share with every jurisdiction or only some of them. It's an important process that you need to build in your work environment to be able to respect that. And if you don't respect, well, then you lose the trust and you are unable to perform this work. Yeah. But also building the trust with the jurisdiction we interact with. We, just to give you a, just refreshing my mind about how it felt in the early days of the mechanism, when we had received maybe a couple of requests for assistance from a couple of jurisdictions, we had no idea whether we would at some stage be seized of a large number of requests and whether those requests would be merely to check whether there is responsive material in our central repository of evidence or whether we would be asked to perform certain acts to dedicate it to the specific investigation. Today, after close to 6 years of operation, and we've been operational really since 2018. We have collected over 2.3 million records. Wow. We have received over 220 requests for assistance from 15 jurisdictions. And we've been able to support close to 115 of them, of these investigations already, by multiple type of support. As I said, searching material in the database, sharing it as per permission to do so, but also connecting jurisdiction with witnesses, interviewing witnesses ourselves. When we don't do that lightly, we don't want to participate in re-traumatizing witness, and we want to do it when it's useful to the jurisdiction that we support or to the cases that we build, but also geolocating crime scenes and many other type of support, doing open search, search of open source materials in languages that jurisdiction lack capacity, obviously in Arabic, but other languages as well. And this has really developed into an important part of the house, dealing with dedicated to those requests, while at the beginning we had a couple of colleagues as part of a bigger section, an ethical section, that were dealing with that. So that's more, a great development.
Yeah, more than 2 million records of evidence, that's very overwhelming amount, and that corresponds with the overwhelming amount of, sadly, crimes committed throughout the context of the Syrian conflict. But your mandate is to collect evidence on the most serious crimes, So how do you define that?
The most serious crimes in our jargon, that's translate into conduct that amount, that may amount to war crimes, crime against humanity, or even genocide. And just to give you an example, for instance, when prosecutors are focusing exclusively on membership in a terrorist organization, for instance, we are not having the capacity, and it's not our mandate to support this kind of proceeding. When they are opening investigation which also encompass the commission of war crimes, war crime against humanity, or genocide, well, then we can support, even if they add charges of membership in terrorist organization. But we wouldn't support proceedings that are exclusively consisting of membership in a terrorist organization. Okay. And this is for a reason, for the victims' core international crimes, as we call them, the three categories I mentioned, which may translate into a variety of conduct, unlawful attacks, torture, illegal detention, siege of entire towns, abductions and slavery, etc., etc. All those awful conduct that in fact are characteristic of the situation in Syria. We are focusing our resources and our energy on supporting justice for these crimes.
Yeah, yeah, it's like gender-based crimes or crimes against children. And does that include also systematic campaigns of bombing towns and cities and
I mean, you summarize it very well. We are very conscious that there are certain categories of victims that are less visible or sometimes entirely invisible. We know they are victims, but if you don't make a dedicated effort to identify the harm they suffered from, why was violence targeting them in particular, well, you're at risk of the accountability that you are supporting not giving them full justice. So we have developed dedicated approaches to have a focus on the gender aspect of these crimes we're investigating, and also surfacing the particular suffering of children in these conflicts. It's not just about understanding the harm they suffer from, it's also understanding the root causes. Why are those specific categories of victims specifically targeted in a conflict? And it's important because justice helps, or should help, building a better future, better societies. And if you are not accounting for the harms suffered by these categories of victims, well, you're unlikely to be in the right move for that.
Yeah. Catherine, the road to justice can be both long and tedious. And I'm sure since you've been active since 1988, I'm sure you are very familiar and you've heard this so many times from locals from like conflict-torn countries. But we are at the phase of collecting and consolidating evidence. And after that, I think you share it. So what do you mean by sharing it? Who do you share it with the national tribunals, with the states, governments, or like, who do you share it with? The Security Council, International Criminal Court?
No, we are sharing with competent jurisdiction. And maybe I should take a few steps back. We clearly, our mandate is focusing heavily on criminal justice, right? Supporting criminal justice for these crimes. But I have interpreted the mandate to also permit supporting broader forms of justice, as long as there is sufficient connection with the core crimes that we are talking about. So for instance, I would say proceeding that would permit victims to obtain reparation, civil suits, civil lawsuits that would permit that, that would fall within mandate in my view. Proceedings before courts of justice that are not adjudicating individual criminal responsibility, but looking, for instance, at state responsibility for crimes, that would also, in my view, fall within the mandate. And as I'm sure you know, some states have taken initiative to hold Syria accountable, the Syrian Arab Republic accountable for the alleged violation of the torture convention. Such a proceeding would fall, in my view, in the mandate. But even broader justice things, as you know, for given the very large amount of person missing as a result of the Syrian situation, number of them having been missing in detention, but more broader than that, it's clear that for the families, talking about justice when they have no clue as to what happened, they can only fear that the worst happened. That's clearly part of the justice effort we need to support. So very early in the life of the mechanism, I determined that we should make every effort to be able to contribute to such a search for missing person. And I'll give you an example. When we review the material, those pieces which form the 2.3 million records in the central repository, our analysts, as they review it, are in a position to tag the material when it contains information that would be helpful to identify the fate of the missing. We don't receive claims from the families, so we're not in position to support the families ourselves, but we can support entities that have a mandate to search for the missing. And I'm sure you've heard that in a recent report, the Secretary General recommended that the international that the General Assembly establishes a new entity, a new mechanism to support the search for missing. This is the type of entity we would be able to support by sharing the information that we identify as we conduct our work that could help finding, giving answers to the family. So as you can see, yes, a very important focus on criminal accountability, but broader than that, and basically supporting the forms of justice that that the victims and survivors are craving for.
Yeah, exactly, and the families are yearning for as well. This is how you can support ongoing efforts for justice, but how can Syrians support your work?
Well, Syrians can and do support the work very much so by sharing not only the documentation that they have contributed to secure, and that's an important aspect, of course, but also by sharing with us their knowledge of the context in which the crimes occurred. We are having more and more colleagues familiar with the conflict. We lack, you know, this broad, profound understanding of the causes of this situation and the understanding of all its dimensions, if I can put it this way. So this contextual aspect, when you are trying to support justice for core international crimes, is critical. It's even in part forming part of the legal element that you have to establish to prove the crimes. But beyond the legal elements, these are extremely important aspects of the situation that you need to capture in your cases. And for that, the engagement with documenting entities, but also representative of victims and survivors, is critically important. And we have, from the very early days of the mechanism, engaged into what I would refer to as a two-way engagement. We are very conscious that Syrians want to know what efforts are being put forward,
yeah,
particularly because there is no international justice entity dealing with the crimes as a court. So it's even more important to inform of the efforts that are often scattered among different jurisdictions, but also those efforts which, as I said at the beginning, aim at building future justice building blocks, if you wish. So we decided that we needed to hear from them. We needed to share within the limits of what can be shared, the steps we're taking. We need to hear whether we were on the right track in focusing on certain crimes first. You asked me what are the most important crimes, the most serious crimes. There are big categories, but you cannot do everything at once. So we've developed internally an approach which we call our structural investigation, which helps not only gathering the information, but also focusing, diving deeper into certain aspect of the situation and basically analyzing certain aspect of it as in order to build those blocks and in order to support ongoing and future efforts. And we want to make sure that our focus was right, that we were not missing certain perspective that we ignored. So this engagement is really important. At the beginning, it was very much a listening of expectation and a sharing of our approach. And it became progressively an opportunity to identify possibilities of filling gaps in our evidence collection, and also of sharing the impact that the work that Syrians have done in documenting and that we are doing as a mechanism, the impact on ongoing proceedings or cases which have been adjudicated. And I think this information, as I said, is even more important because there is not just one judicial interlocutor, but many of them.
When I talk to Syrians, whether friends or during interviews, there is this overwhelming feeling of frustration and also despair that even if they were victims or survivors themselves, they'd be like, I survived, I'm in safety, I moved on. I don't believe that there will be accountability because we see a couple of scattered efforts here and there, for example, under the umbrella of universal jurisdiction. So is there anything you can tell the Syrians that no crimes go unpunished, forgotten, yeah, unpunished, and that there is hope maybe one day that these crimes will be the perpetrators will be held accountable.
I'm convinced there is hope. Yes, you're right. The road is bumpy. It's tedious. It's taking awful amount of efforts from everyone. And the reason why I'm optimistic is because there is this convergence of willingness for justice. Mm-hmm. Yet, I'm equally frustrated. It would be easier if in the the scope of jurisdiction available, we had some that can deal with the higher level echelons of responsibilities. Mm-hmm. We don't have that available now, but efforts are being made to go in that direction. And you see, I could concentrate our efforts at the mechanism on only supporting the universal jurisdiction or extrajudicial forms of jurisdiction that mm-hmm. are available, as I said, 15 jurisdictions, that's not nothing. But mm-hmm. we are making a good amount of efforts to prepare for the longer term efforts.
Yes.
The longer term justice, sorry. We're also continuously advocating for such forms of justice, mm-hmm. and it's very important. I know it may sound a drop in the ocean, but when we had last year, a debate in an ARIA formula meeting at the Security Council, which brought back accountability on the agenda of the Council. It's mm-hmm. not nothing. It's important. It's the states are very conscious, a number of them, that there will be no future peace in Syria if there is
without
no
justice.
A sufficient amount of justice to give the victims and survivors, irrespective of communities they belong to, the feeling that yes, there has been a sense of justice. We're far from that, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's important to those, on the one hand, to be aware of and to see the importance of some of these judgments that are taking mm-hmm. place. I'm thinking of the Koblenz trials, but I'm thinking also of specific trials and convictions which identified the existence of the genocide against certain communities. I'm thinking here of the Yazidi, but those crimes which establish responsibility, maybe not yet at the higher echelon, but in some medium level perpetrators and show a system. Of course, if I'm a victim, I lost my son, I lost my wife or my husband, I don't feel this is justice to me. But if I think of it, right, if I see there is recognition of a widespread and systematic attack by the government against its civilian population, if I see that there are determination of responsibilities for war crimes, well, I can start to see that, yes, maybe there is justice at the end of the tunnel. There won't be.
Yes.
A trial for each victim, right? Let's
yeah,
see.
Exactly.
Let's face it. It never happens in these huge scale atrocities. But if mm-hmm. there are at least sufficient amount of cases in which victims can see themselves represented, the same type of harm against the same community, and progressively enough crime-based perpetrators, but also some of those who have, you know, orchestrated, make those crimes happen, well, then I think in the end there is indeed justice in sight. It's going to take time, let's face it, and the political situation doesn't necessarily help, but I think one needs to continue to make those efforts, preserve the evidence, build the blocks for justice, and make it clear that if, as we all wish, at some stage there is an opportunity of international justice, not to replace, to complement, right?
Yes, yes.
The justice effort. At least we've done our work to facilitate and make it speedier for such an international justice to take place. And that's what we're trying to achieve with our modest but important role.
And that's very integral to achieving peace for Syrians eventually, whether it is a peace process or a transitional justice. And we've seen some of the fruit already under the umbrella of universal jurisdiction. And it's one person, and the trial took a long time, but eventually justice was served and the perpetrator was held accountable. I think about 2 minutes, but I had a question in your op-ed for Al Jazeera. You did mention there are challenges though under the umbrella of universal jurisdiction, and that includes in the form of a veto from member countries of the UN. But do you see the more cases of universal jurisdiction coming in the future?
I think so. I think, well, there is what we call the pure universal jurisdiction, where you need no link at all with the victim or with the perpetrator for a state's judiciary to act. But you also have, so that's quite limited, the number of states that have that. Germany is probably one of the best example of that form of universal jurisdiction. But in many other countries, you have the possibility, according to law, for core international crimes, those more serious crimes, to act when the link between the state at stake and the crimes is more tenuous. So the presence on the territory of a suspect will be enough for the authorities to act. This kind of links, which you would require much more for an ordinary crime. So yes, I'm hopeful that more and more states that are willing to take their part in this mm-hmm. effort will find a way. And I'm strongly encouraging those whose legislation is making obstacles in that direction are actually finding ways to overcome those. And I'm aware that some states are looking into how to facilitate that. Now, of course, like everyone, I'm worried that the attention on justice for Syria is shifting. And so I think it's very important to reiterate that there may be other crises in the world and other victims that need attention too. I mean, efforts overcome to offer opportunities of justice for Syrian victims cannot stop, right? And I'm encouraged by the fact that the war crimes unit we are working with are really committed. So far, the bulk of cases are dealing with are in relation to the Syrian situation. And of course, their resources are limited. That's why they have new situation coming up. Ukraine is certainly one of them.
Yes.
So we need to make sure that the international community in forms like the mechanism that I'm heading are supporting the efforts and make it easier for them to investigate those crimes and to bring perpetrators to justice. That's what I think we owe to the Syrian victims.
Yes. Yes, it's important to keep Syria and the center, especially as you said, it was a bit shadowed by the atrocities being committed by Russia and Ukraine, and how the international community rushed to establish jurisdiction bodies to look into these crimes. I think within a couple of weeks of the beginning of the which Syria didn't have really, and that's another aspect of the frustration when I speak to Syrians. But as long as the efforts are still ongoing and you're doing the huge effort of collecting and preserving the evidence, that's what Syrians I think need at this stage. Any last thing you would like to say before we end this interview?
Well, just assuring you that my team and I are really committed, and we've engaged in this long way process, but I think we see signs of moving in the right direction. As I said, we started with a couple of requests for assistance. We've over 220 requests now, and we see the figures increasing. So as our own capacity to support. In the beginning, we were only able to support when we had collected material that was responsive. We've engaged into dedicated investigative capacity to support the jurisdiction, and I think that is well appreciated, and it should be a sign of hope for victims and survivors.
Yeah, it is a sign of hope. And thank you so much for all that you're doing, and thank you to your team as well.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks for your time.
Thank you.